Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to our latest webinar on creating certainty in uncertain times, how endowments link past, current, and future generations. I apologize that I've had a little bit of technical difficulty, maybe due to the winds, but my computer's gone in and out. So I have a camera on one side, a computer on the other side, and I'm trying to make it work. So hopefully that won't be too distracting to everybody. But welcome for being here. On behalf of my colleagues at the Foundation, I want to welcome you all for attending today to talk about one of the most impactful gifts one can make to support a nonprofit, an endowment. I'm so pleased to be presenting today with my colleague, Natella Roisman, and our Foundation trustee, Abby Feynman, an attorney and expert in estate planning, who graciously agreed to be a part of this program. Before we get into the program, I want to let you know that throughout the pandemic, the Foundation's been offering a series of webinars on various topics related to estate planning and establishing a meaningful legacy. All the programs are recorded, as this will be, and available on our website. I encourage you to visit the website and view the programs if you missed them or you want to share them with friends or family. I also want to let you know that the Foundation and our community of donors continues to be very active in grant making, and that since the beginning of COVID in mid-March, the Foundation's distributed $8 million in grants toward COVID relief and racial equity. If you wanna learn more about the work we're doing in this area, or you wanna have some idea of nonprofits that you might support, please be in touch with us or visit our webpage. There's a site there that lists the nonprofits that we've been supporting. Lastly, a bit of housekeeping. As I said, this is being recorded, although each of you are anonymous to each other, so no one else knows who's on the call. If you have questions during the presentation, I ask that you use the chat function at the bottom of your screen, and we'll address those at the end of the presentation. And again, a technical difficulty here, I can't turn the slides myself, so I'm gonna ask Jessica or Tamara, who's here for technical difficulty, to please turn the next slide. Today, we're going to talk about why you might choose to establish an endowment and the mechanics of creating one, including tax and estate planning considerations. We'll also talk about the management of endowments and how they work at the Jewish Community Foundation. Before we get into the mechanics of how the endowments work, I want to illustrate how the philanthropic goals, your philanthropic goals and giving, including endowments, may be different than traditional or transactional giving, and how their creation can impact the relationship you have with a nonprofit for generations. Can I please have the next slide? All of you attending are already donors of one kind or another, and you probably support many nonprofits. So you know that there are differences in the way you give. You might give annually to your synagogue, your alma mater, or any number of support groups, and you can make those gifts through cash, securities, or other means. You get a yearly tax deduction for those gifts, and they're mostly transactional, and they can happen anytime without very much planning. Planned gifts, however, and endowments fall into this category, are much more complicated. These types of gifts are about achieving some long-term goal for you and the charitable institution. For you, the long-term goal for a planned gift might be reducing estate taxes, or establishing a foundation or a trust, or some type of fund that involves you and perhaps your family, so they'll stay involved in charitable efforts. Planned gifts generally have a third party involved, for example, a trustee, or someone who might manage the asset you're leaving behind for charitable purposes, or the Jewish Community Foundation, where we can do both. Planned gifts that are endowments should also be about the long-term goals of achieving what the charity wants. And when you create an endowment, especially through your estate, you're really creating a deep tie between you and the charity that can last generations. And I'll illustrate that a bit more with the next slide. As you can see, this is the traditional giving pyramid. And on the side, I wrote some terms, identification, information, all the way up to investment. What I want to point out here is that when you give, you and the nonprofit you're supporting are in a mutually beneficial relationship. You might give a small amount to a charity, and that's not typically a deep relationship. You know them, they know you, they know how to get in touch with you, to solicit you every year, or in the case of a candidate running for office every day. However, as you grow your involvement in giving to an institution, they are naturally much more interested in you as a thought leader and a donor. And when you make a planned gift, like an endowment, when you include the charity in your estate plans, you've really elevated that charity to family status, because your trust might say, I'm leaving this much to my family and this much to this nonprofit. You've equated them with your family. At this level, you're not just giving, you're really a partner with the institution, working to ensure their stability and growth. And I suspect that you have a much, much deeper relationship, even a personal relationship, with the leadership from those groups. In the case of endowments, a chance to create a gift that will keep you and your family involved for generations. An example of this might be an endowed chair at a hospital or a university, where every year the chair gives an annual lecture, and before the lecture, they mention the person who created the chair, why they created it, invite their family, your family, and keep them involved. If you have an endowed scholarship, every year the student gets the scholarship, they would know the story about why you created that scholarship. If you have an endowment that supports a building fund, you might have your name on the building so that people in future generations can see that you are involved in that. To get more into the details of how this works, I'm going to ask for the next slide and turn it over to my colleague, Natella Roisman.
Thank you, Steve. Thank you, everyone, for being here. Earlier this year, we did a program on charitable estate planning where we discussed how donor-advised funds and endowments can be a very useful tool. And if you missed it, you can watch the recording. You can just email me or Steve and we'll get you the link. Today, we're gonna take a deeper dive into endowments. And I'm really excited because I love working on endowment funds for all of the reasons that Steve mentioned. Really, they're the most thoughtful gifts. They're very meaningful gifts for people. And so they're really fun gifts to work with people on. And they're really a unique vehicle that links past, current, and future generations. Hopefully by the end of this presentation, you're going to be really clear about what an endowment is, why you might want one, and how to go about getting one started. So let's start with just a basic definition. What is an endowment fund? At the foundation, an endowment fund is a charitable fund that provides ongoing support to one or more charities or causes chosen by the donor creating the endowment. The endowment fund will be prudently invested by the foundation for generations to come. And each year, a certain percentage of the endowment's assets will be distributed to your chosen charities or causes. The idea is to preserve principal so that distributions can continue in perpetuity. Okay, so with that, I want to spend a bit of time exploring why might someone choose an endowment fund. Next slide, please. There really isn't a single reason that applies to everyone. So in my experience, there are a variety of different goals and motivations that might lead someone to choose an endowment fund as a charitable vehicle. We're going to cover several of those features. They're not likely to all resonate with any one person, but they should give you a good idea of why endowments are a uniquely effective vehicle for accomplishing certain goals. One great feature that endowment funds offer is ease and convenience. Essentially, they distribute an automatic annual gift, kind of like autopay. Some people really like the fact that once an endowment is established, you don't have to do anything. The money will be invested and distributions will be made every year to your designated charities or programs. So if you want to provide a gift every year of more or less the same amount, an endowment fund might achieve that for you and make your life a little easier. There's a donor I worked with who essentially used an endowment fund to replace her annual giving to one of her favorite organizations. She had been supporting a local arts program annually, and she wanted to continue to provide support beyond her lifetime. But instead of waiting to fund it from her estate, she decided to fund it immediately and have the distributions replace the annual gift she made every year. She may add more to it later, especially if there are income tax reasons that come up for her, and she may add to it from her estate as well, depending on how things develop. It's great because she didn't have to think about it anymore. It just happens automatically. And moving to the next point, it also happens forever. Longevity is a big factor that draws people to endowments. An endowment allows you to provide support in perpetuity. a gift that keeps on giving, if you will. Maybe you're someone who doesn't only think about now, or even 10 years from now. If you are someone who is interested in the long-term future, not just the present and near-term future, an endowment is a great vehicle to address those longer-term concerns. Lump sum gifts, even large ones, can be spent and gone pretty quickly. So people who value security and like to plan for the future find endowments really appealing because they provide a self-sustaining income stream that will continue for years and years. This is a mindset or a value that I find really resonates with some people and not at all with others. And often it becomes more meaningful to people in the later parts of their life. People sometimes have a shift in their perspective around their concern for longevity and continuity as they age. We can theorize about why that is, but the fact is, for those who find the idea of establishing longevity appealing, an endowment is a fantastic vehicle. Another big factor is stability. You may believe that it's wiser to give a little over time than all at once. Nonprofits are often faced with more need than they feel they can meet. If the money is there, nonprofits may expand programs, create new programs, hire new staff. People, and especially nonprofit professionals, tend to be very optimistic about the future. The money is available and there, and the need is there, or we have a great idea, so use all the money right now, right? There's no reason to worry that we won't have as much in our budget in later years. Especially for smaller organizations, large lump sum gifts, it can overwhelm them. They may not be equipped to manage a large sum, or they may not have the expertise to invest in budget over many years. All this isn't to say that there aren't nonprofits that are really well managed, but having an option that promotes stability is something that reasonably resonates with certain donors. And an endowment allows you to provide an income stream instead of a lump sum that removes the charity's responsibility to manage money over time. It's slow and steady rather than all at once and then nothing. The effect of longevity and stability is greater security for the institution, for the future of the institution. It makes recessions easier to overcome. Even in years when fundraising is more difficult, there are funds that can be relied on to keep going. And when an organization knows it will receive a gift from your endowment in perpetuity, it's set up to better long-term plan. The organization knows that it can depend on a regular income stream and then it can budget accordingly. That can allow it to think bigger, to build and expand programs in a responsible way. They can have more confidence that whatever they put in place can stand the test of time. There's also a layer of security for the donor that comes from having endowment managed by the foundation. Not only because of our expertise and long, excellent track record managing funds, but also because if an issue with a nonprofit arises down the line, the foundation can step in and address it. For example, if the selected organization ceases to exist, we will find a good substitute. We are committed to being really responsible stewards of endowment funds and to ensuring that the donor's vision is met in perpetuity. Next, a really big benefit of endowment funds is that they can perpetuate the donor's values and priorities. Ensuring the future of organizations that reflect your values and priorities is a way of perpetuating them. The world changes, cultural values and priorities may shift, but you're ensuring that organizations that you believe are fundamental and should continue to be a priority will be able to sustain. That's very powerful. And even beyond that, you can choose to support a particular program within an organization that is important to you by including restrictions in your endowment. For example, you may want to give a gift to university. You could give an unrestricted gift for general operations, or you could specifically give to the School of Engineering, or establish a chair or professorship, or even establish a scholarship for students in the School of Engineering. There are a lot of different restrictions that are possible depending on both the institution's needs and capabilities and your particular priorities and interests. So like Steve said, it's really about that beautiful partnership. The point is that your endowment can include a restriction that the distributions must be used for a particular program or purpose. And it could be an existing program that is important to you, or even possibly, depending on the size of the gift, it could be a new program that you design along with the organization. When a distribution comes from your endowment fund at the foundation, it's accompanied by a transmittal letter that states how it is to be used. The receiving organization then has a legal obligation to use the money per the specified terms or return it. And again, of course, if an issue arises, the foundation will figure out a solution that best furthers the donor's intent. So you can see how a restricted endowment specifying a particular use for the yearly distributions can be a really effective way to ensure an organization's support for the donor's specific priorities. Generally, if you're thinking of restricting your endowment gift, it's a really good idea to communicate and coordinate with the organization who will receive the distributions to ensure that they are willing and able to use the money for your desired purposes. You also want to keep in mind that you don't want to create a restriction that is too narrow so that it's not possible or practical for the organization to reasonably fulfill those terms in the future. This isn't something that happened to the foundation, but I'd heard of a gift that a donor had left to a school that was to be used to purchase typewriters. At some point, the school no longer needed typewriters and it couldn't accept the gift. So that's just something to kind of keep in mind, that you really need to think about what will likely to continue to be relevant and what may become obsolete. Next slide, please. Moving on to legacy, a sense of personal legacy is something that is really important to people. Many people grapple with the question of what they are leaving behind at some point or other during their lifetime. An endowment is a great way to know that you are leaving behind something enduring. I have worked with a lot of donors who don't have children, and they get a particular sense of fulfillment in knowing that their legacy is preserved with their endowment. There was a couple last year who had a large estate and no heirs, and it was really emotionally meaningful for them to be able to leave something tangible behind that would endure and reflect their values. It also meant a lot to them that the fruit of their life's hard work was going to create good in the world for so many years to come. But really, regardless of whether you have children or other areas in your life where you leave behind a legacy, so your career, your family, your friendships, et cetera, your charitable legacy is distinct and important, and it's a component to consider. In addition to the reward of feeling good about the fact that your contribution will be serving the community for years to come, there's also the possibility of personal recognition from the nonprofits designated as beneficiaries. That same couple I just mentioned, who had no heirs, they're leaving their estate to an endowment with us that will support a few different organizations. And they were thrilled to learn that all of the organizations were more than happy to discuss recognition opportunities with them. It meant a lot to them that their identities would continue to be associated with their gifts. And it was so wonderful to help them achieve that satisfaction. The foundation itself also recognizes all established endowment funds by listing them on our annual report every year, as well as occasionally listing them in other publications like the Jewish Journal. So really, it's possible to get double recognition or recognition on two levels. For some people, it's not just their own legacy they're concerned with. They want to honor a loved one. That could be a spouse, a parent, a sibling, a friend, or even a child. I recently worked with a donor who wanted to honor his deceased wife by creating an endowment fund to support organizations that she had been involved with and cared deeply about. One was a local Jewish camp, which, by the way, he was not confident would be around for decades to come, and that was before the pandemic. But to address that concern, he provided a backup organization in case the camp closed down at any point. The other organization is a national advocacy and social services organization with a small local branch. And he only wanted to support the local branch, which his wife volunteered with and focused on priorities here in Los Angeles. So what he did is he restricted the gift to the LA branch so the organization couldn't use the funds to support priorities of other cities. And honoring his wife in that way felt so gratifying because it allowed him to celebrate her life and her passions in a really tangible way. He also shared with me that his children were delighted by the memorial to their mother. And it was so touching to be part of all of that. An endowment can also be a way of keeping multiple generations connected. Anyone can add to an endowment fund at any time, and whoever makes the gift can receive a charitable tax deduction. Sometimes multiple generations of a family contribute to an endowment fund, which is beautiful. So, you know, in my previous example, if the children wanted to commemorate their mother sometime in the future, they might want to add to her endowment fund. As children and grandchildren add to an endowment fund over time, they can continue to expand the work that the endowment fund supports, which furthers the causes and projects that are important to the family. It can be a really effective way to feel connected across generations. And last, but certainly not least, an endowment fund can provide a really useful tool for tax and estate planning goals. Abby is going to cover this in some detail in a few minutes, so I'm not going to steal her thunder. But first, I'm going to turn it over to Steve to share some of what donors he's worked with and what they were able to accomplish by using an endowment fund at the foundation.
Thanks, Natella. Just two examples that we've worked with, like Natella mentioned. One is a donor who is a widow and is the recipient of her husband's IRA. She doesn't want to take the money for income purposes, and he supported two charities for more than 40 years while he was living. So she takes the minimum required distribution from that IRA, puts it into an endowment every year, and is growing a large corpus so that in perpetuity, those two organizations will continue to have annual gifts, and his name will continue to be listed on their roster of people who are giving every year. Another is an individual who is single, has children, but the children, in his words and view, don't really need the money that he has. He has modest means, but his estate plan includes his home, which gives him a lot more power in giving than his annual support could. He belongs to a modest synagogue. He's been giving modestly to them for many years to support a music program and a lecture. He wants those to continue, as the institution does, upon his death. So he's going to leave his estate to the foundation with endowments that will support those programs in perpetuity. He also asked that they include invitations to his family that's living and to talk about why he created these. And it's really a way for him to keep his legacy alive at that institution in a much greater way than he could when he was living. And I'll turn it over to Abby to talk about the real meat of this, the tax part.
Thanks, Steve. Thanks, Natella. Next slide, please. So we've talked about the reasons behind someone considering an endowment. And now I just wanted to touch at a very high level on some ways to supercharge your donation or to be thoughtful in terms of your donation to your endowment so that you can maximize the amount that's available for charitable purposes, hopefully minimize some of your income taxes, both in terms of recognition as well as in your charitable contribution deduction. So during your lifetime, you have an opportunity to consider what you want to use to make your charitable donation. And you can keep it really simple and use cash. Everybody likes to receive cash, but there may be opportunities to use appreciated stock or other complex assets to accomplish your goals and multiple goals. So for example, if you use long-term capital gain stock that's publicly traded on an exchange, you can utilize all of that asset, the fair market value of that stock, give that to charity to fund or to the Jewish Community Foundation and fund your endowment while avoiding the recognition of income taxes on that appreciation. And this would allow you to maximize, like I said, the amount going to the charity while maximizing your charitable deduction and minimizing your income taxes. It is something you could also use to rebalance your portfolio. It's something that you can do periodically without any commitment up front. And it's a nice thing to keep in mind when you're doing your year-end planning. Another thing to consider would be stock in a closely held business. Maybe there's an opportunity to transfer that stock and get a full fair market value deduction on the value of that contribution. Real estate, both residential and commercial, there's an opportunity there as well, but you need to be careful and take into account if there's any debt on the asset in advance, because you don't want to have some unexpected income tax ramifications. Private equity, hedge funds, the Jewish Community Foundation can work with you on how to accomplish your goals and what makes sense to donate. And really there's a lot of opportunity. Another thing to think about, which isn't on the slide, is life insurance. So you can name your endowment as a beneficiary of a life insurance policy. You could also consider transferring a life insurance policy during your lifetime, the owner and the beneficiary, and fund it with contributions to pay the premiums on an annual basis. So there's a lot of opportunity to, as I call, supercharge your gift and maximize your deduction. But if you're going to do that, you also want to make sure that you understand and speak to your own advisors, your accountants, your lawyers, and like I said, the Jewish Community Foundation has information both on their website as well as being available to communicate with you directly on this. But you want to make sure that you do it right, because if you don't do it right, you may have some unexpected income tax consequences. And you may lose the full benefit of the charitable deduction. So one of the things to keep in mind is, how do you substantiate the value of your contribution? For cash and publicly traded stock, that's easy. But for these other types of assets, these more complex assets, you may need to go about getting a qualified appraisal. And in order to do that, it's going to depend on the type of asset you're contributing. And you want to make sure that you hire someone who is familiar with the rules and the requirements associated with the donation. The qualified appraisal cannot be dated more than 60 days prior to the charitable contribution, but it can be after the charitable contribution as long as it's received before you file your return. There's also a form 8283 that you're going to need. That will be provided by the qualified appraiser, signed and filled out by the qualified appraiser. And then it also needs to be signed by the donor and the donee and attached to the donor's income tax return. So there are a number of steps that need to be taken, but they should be easily obtained and followed with someone who knows how to handle charitable contributions of these types of assets. Timing considerations may also be important and thought through. So for example, if you have a business that you're planning on selling and monetizing, and you want to use a portion of your stock for charitable purposes, you want to make sure that the sale isn't too close to being concluded. One way I like to think about it is, before the deal is signed, consider your charitable options. Because if you don't wait, if you do it too close to the transaction after all of the parameters have been met and things are just waiting to close, the IRS could come and say that you're going to have to recognize the taxes on the stock that you contributed, and you won't get the benefit that you were trying to achieve. So you want to try to plan for your charitable donation of stock in a closely held business well in advance of signing that documentation on the deal. The IRS is not very forgiving if you don't follow their rules as it relates to charitable contributions. So you want to make sure that you understand what you need to do and that you follow those parameters. Otherwise, you lose out on the benefits. As Steve alluded to a little while ago, you can utilize your IRA benefits to provide charitable donations if you do it to the right type of charity and you do it in the right way and you're old enough. So there are a few rules around an IRA qualified charitable distribution, but the rules are pretty straightforward. They're available to anyone who's 70 and a half or over. Under the new SECURE Act, you don't have to start taking distributions until you're over 72, but you can still utilize the qualified charitable distribution deduction for anyone 70 and a half and older. So you can still take advantage of this opportunity. The distribution has to be a direct distribution from the IRA directly to the qualified charity. You can't take the money out and then donate it. But if you do it right, you can avoid paying income taxes on that qualified charitable distribution on your personal return and maximize the amount going to charity. The IRS has allowed you to use up to $100,000 a year for this purpose, and it does count towards your required minimum distribution. So normally when you take a distribution from your IRA, it's treated as an ordinary income tax asset, and you'd have to pay ordinary income taxes on that distribution. But by using a qualified charitable distribution of up to $100,000, you can avoid that significant income tax, which is really nice. If it turns out that your required minimum distribution is $200,000 per year, you still can only use $100,000, but you can get that benefit and you can do it each year, and you don't have to do it each year. You could use it for different purposes. The qualified charities are something that you need to be sensitive to. It is not available for a DAF, but it is available for an endowment. So it is a nice way to think through how you might fund your endowment on a regular basis. And this is a permanent part of the law, at least for now. So take advantage of it while you can. Next slide. If you want to fund an endowment, but you want to wait, or you want to continue to fund it during your lifetime, but provide a certain amount at death, you have the opportunity to do so in your estate plan. And that would be your will or your revocable trust, hopefully your revocable trust, but your will would work too. And you just want to make sure that you're structuring it in the right way. So in your estate, you can choose to leave a percentage. You can choose to leave a dollar amount. You could choose to leave a specific asset. So you have a number of options in terms of what you fund it with and how. But ultimately, what your estate plan would say is that you would leave the assets to the Jewish Community Foundation for the purposes of your family's endowment there. And that gift could also indicate if it's for a specific charity or if it's for more, but as long as it identifies your endowment there, the next aspect of that estate donation would be to have a deferred endowment agreement already executed during your lifetime with the Jewish Community Foundation. So that agreement is something that you put forward. You can amend it and modify it during your lifetime. And it would identify any restrictions or any direction that you want with respect to your endowment. It could identify a specific charity that you want to support or charities. It could identify specific causes that you want to support as well. And the nice thing about having your estate planning documents direct your assets or certain assets to your endowment at the Jewish Community Foundation, it is a nice way to be able to revise your charitable wishes and the intent behind the endowment prior to its funding, prior to your death, without having to update your estate plan every time you want to make a revision. I would still recommend that you communicate with your estate planning lawyer and your accountant to let them know what you're thinking and doing, but it's a kind of shortcut to updating your charitable wishes without having to go through that whole exercise. Another thing you could think about doing is using the balance or a portion of the balance of your donor advised fund to pour into your endowment on your death. So there's a donor advised fund successor form that you can execute and again amend before you pass away if you change your mind. But that allows you to have your donor advised fund coordinate with your endowment when you pass away And make sure that your charitable plan with respect to your family and your wishes are integrated in a nice, clean, organized fashion. As I mentioned before, you can add to your endowment at any time. So if you do decide to fund it during your lifetime, you don't have to fund it each year. You can fund it sporadically based on what your charitable intentions are for that year, what assets you have, what your tax effect might be for the year. And it's just available as a recipient. You know, in terms of how I approach this type of discussion with my clients, I think a lot of people have charitable intent and go through the process in a thoughtful way, but they don't always know how to organize their charitable thinking and how it integrates with their estate plan. And I like to ask questions as to what people are giving to each year. What is their intention behind that charitable giving? Is it for a specific purpose? Do they want that recognition? Do they want to sustain a project or a program? Are they passionate about a cause and want to figure out if there's a way for them to fund it over their lifetime? Are they thinking of multiple organizations? What is the legacy? What is the purpose behind the giving? And as part of that process, we usually talk about donor advised funds, endowment funds, private foundations, giving lump sums to charitable organizations, funding things over time. And a lot of times people really know what they're trying to achieve and don't necessarily know what the best way to go about it is. So we spend a lot of time talking about it. We also talk about the practical reality of cost and administration and, you know, wanting to make sure that the charitable funds are used in a thoughtful manner. And you know, it gets into a really robust conversation and talking about how it, you know, relates to their legacy and what their children or their family or their spouse or their heart tells them. Next slide, please. So I mentioned before that the website for the Jewish Community Foundation has a lot of really great information. There's even some ways to analyze how much your donation is going to result in, your charitable deduction, what the funds are going to be used for. But I thought that this slide really was a useful one because it shows how the Jewish Community Foundation holds their donor advised funds and their endowment funds. And it talks a little bit about some of the differences in terms of what you need to create them, set one up. For example, you see that the minimum fee for an endowment is, the starting point is $25,000. But the other thing that I thought was really interesting and worth mentioning is the investment options. So endowments get to use the common investment fund or investment pool. And from serving on the board and hearing how the investment committee is takes seriously the idea of what, how to invest the money and how seriously they take it to heart and how important it is that it be used for the charitable purposes that it was intended for, I thought that this was a really impressive way to think about how to utilize your charitable funds. Because by, you know, for me personally, wanting to know that it's being invested in a thoughtful manner, especially where you're going to have this ongoing charitable commitment on an annual basis for charitable purposes in terms of the restricted either to specific organizations or causes. To me, having some of the best and brightest minds out there in the investment community working together in an organized fashion with this fiduciary duty towards their the Jewish Community Foundation's clients and the community at large, I think was very meaningful. So I thought that this slide would be a helpful tool for any of you who are considering using an endowment. And I don't want to steal anyone's thunder, Steve or Nutella, but you know, even just looking at the amount that goes to charity each year. But I'll let you get into that a little bit more. But thank you for letting me participate in this webinar. And I'll turn it over, I guess, to Nutella next.
Thank you so much, Abby. That was awesome. You did such a great job being so clear in your explanation of all that. I really appreciate it. And we're so lucky to have you on our board and to have you involved with us. So thank you so much.
Thank you.
Now that you're all excited about endowments and what they can do, I'm going to quickly go over how you would go about establishing your endowment at the foundation. I know I personally like to be really clear about the process of things before getting into them. So I try to break it down as clearly as possible into steps so that you could know exactly what to expect. First, call us. It's not on the slide, but call us. Call me, call Steve or Dan Rothblatt, and let us know that you're interested in an endowment and want to discuss your particular situation. You're going to have some important decisions to make, and we can discuss it with you, and we can walk you through it. One of those decisions is which organization or causes to support. So as I discussed, you can select specific nonprofits or programs. You can also just include a field of interest, for example, healthcare in Israel, and leave it to the foundation to regularly select the best charities within that field of interest on an ongoing basis. And last but not least, donors can also support the foundation's grant making in the community by giving to the foundation's permanent legacy fund. In 1954, a little history lesson for you guys, the foundation was established by a small group of Jewish leaders who, in the time of post-war prosperity, they wanted to plan for the community's future needs, and they wanted to build a permanent resource for the community as needs continued to go on and change. So our grant making really responds to the needs of the community and the needs of the day. So for example, when things are good, we're funding new programs that serve the evolving needs of the whole Jewish community in Los Angeles. And then this year, you know, it was a little different, and we shifted our grant making to address the community's needs responding to the COVID crisis. There's really so much that can be said about the foundation's grant making over all these years and the amazing organizations and programs that were created or able to grow because of the foundation's support. And I encourage you all to check out our website to learn more. And if your values and priorities are aligned with ours, then contributing to the Permanent Legacy Fund and pooling your dollars with us is a great way to know that your dollars are going to meet the needs that are relevant to the community and that are thoroughly vetted and monitored. You can also, you know, do any combination of those things. As I alluded to earlier, you can select backup organizations if the nonprofit or program no longer exists. And prior to the time your endowment is funded, you can change the organizations you selected. But once it's funded, there are no more changes. So be sure that you are funding what you want to fund. If you aren't settled on which organizations to support, the foundation staff can help you with these choices. We don't have any agenda besides making sure that you understand your options and that you make selections that align with your expressed goals. The other major piece that will need to be decided is how the endowment will be funded. So Abby talked a lot about this. It includes deciding when to fund. Are you going to fund it now, next year, 5 years, or from your estate upon death? You can fund it at any time during your life. And as Abby said, you can use stock or qualified charitable distribution. That makes very tax efficient gifts. You can also give from your estate and do what we refer to as a deferred endowment. Basically, you go through the whole process with us to set up an endowment, but then rather than actually fund it now, you provide for a distribution from your estate upon death. And then when the funds are received by us, your deferred endowment will magically become an active endowment and it begins to be managed by the foundation. So essentially, in doing a deferred endowment, we get all the instructions and paperwork in place and ready to go for when funding does occur sometime in the future. And as also mentioned, but worth mentioning again, if you have a DAF with us, you can also fund an endowment through your DAF upon death by using the DAF successor form. And I think we have an image of it on the next slide. You can find it on our website. You'll still need to go through the whole process of establishing an endowment, but this form allows the funds to transfer through from your DAF to an endowment. Next slide, please. You're also going to need to consider the amount you want to fund. So the minimum amount to open an endowment at the foundation is just $25,000. Obviously, the more you contribute, the bigger the distributions will be. So depending on what you're hoping to achieve, you can look at how the numbers work out. And a final factor to consider here is the type of asset you want to use to fund your endowment. As Abby explained, there are relevant tax implications around timing and asset type that should be properly considered. Next slide, please. You're also going to need to pick a name for your endowment. This is what your endowment will be referred to, and it will be reflected in the foundation's communications listing our endowments. It could be your family name. It could be your full name, you and your spouse's full names. It could also not refer to a person at all, but instead refer to a purpose. For example, the Bow Ties for Cats Endowment Fund, one of my personal favorite causes. You probably figured there would be some paperwork at some point, and Abby mentioned this too. You're going to have to enter into an endowment agreement that with the foundation that includes relevant instructions. But it's just a few pages of terms, and it's not complicated or burdensome at all to complete. If your endowment fund designates multiple charities, you can provide percentages for each nonprofit or field of interest you want to support. So for example, you can have your endowment fund support four different organizations, and you can have each one receive an equal share, or you can assign whatever proportion you want. So you can give 50% of yearly distributions to one, and then another can get 30%, and then the remaining two can each get 10%. Lots of flexibility in how you want to do that. And then each donor is going to need to decide whether and when to notify the charities designated in the endowment based on that donor's specific motivations and goals. The foundation isn't going to notify charities until the endowment is funded and a distribution is ready to be made. So if the donor wants to be particular about how the money is going to be used, so restricting it in some way, as we discussed, the donor would typically arrange for those restrictions directly with the recipient organization before finalizing the endowment agreement. Similarly, if the donor would like the recipient organization to provide some kind of recognition for the gift, that would be arranged and should be arranged directly with the recipient organization before finalizing any agreement and certainly before funding the endowment. Foundation staff is available to help you navigate that if you are interested in those issues. There's definitely support there if you want it. Kind of on the other hand, if you think you might change your mind, or you may prefer not to receive attention from an organization, you may decide not to say anything to the designated beneficiary until the endowment is funded. And really, that's it. Once your endowment is established, the funding is provided for, and your work is done. It's going to be managed by the foundation, which Steve is going to tell you a little bit about.
Thank you, Nutella. Next slide, please, Tara. So Abby went into this a little bit, so I'll just go through this a little bit quickly. All endowments held at the foundation are managed, as Abby said, in our common investment pool, and which has been in place for many, many years. And it is focused on long-term growth, more of a steady as she goes, rather than trying to hit a home run. So there's continued annual and assured payout to the nonprofit that's on the receiving side. The investments, as Abby said, are also managed by our investment committee, made up of impressive leaders who are seasoned, and they meet regularly, report to the board. And if I can have the next slide, these are things we also report out through our annual report to the community. So everybody can watch and see how we're doing. You can see I highlighted the endowment fund here and the common investment pool. If you want to get more information on this, you can certainly go to our annual report, which is online, and take a look at it. But we do report these numbers every to our board quarterly, and the investment committee monitors it, and we want to ensure that we have long-term payout that meets the institution's needs. May I have the next slide, please? Ultimately, all the investment decisions are under the purview of the Board of Trustees for the foundation, and we do have right now a 4% payout rate to the institution, which is based on returns smoothed over a five-year average to ensure that there are no ups and downs. And again, so the institution will get a regular payout, assuming there's no real market disruption. We do take a 1% fee on the endowments, And that goes into our grant making so that we can continue to make Los Angeles a better place for everybody. So if you're concerned about the what the fees do, having that fee come back to the Jewish Community Foundation in part to help our grant making is really a way to do two good things. You help your institution and you help the Jewish Community Foundation make Los Angeles a better place for all of us. On the next slide is just, this was mentioned before, but in our annual report, we also do highlight everybody who has a legacy gift and endowment fund with us. And we also put this in the Jewish Journal. I understand it's not in print right now, but when it's in print, we highlight it there as well. We take out an ad and do this. So this shows up every year in our annual report, and we do make a big deal over endowment donors at the institution. Lastly, on the next slide, I just want to provide some resources for you. If you go to our website, there's the DAF form that was mentioned before. We also have a very thorough estate planning workbook that is helpful if you want to take a look at it before you do your own estate plan. It's a way to work through many, many issues that you might have when you see your attorney, your accountant, your financial advisor. Also, the endowment brochure is there, the gift calculator that Abby mentioned, and of course, the DAF agreement that will be there. And we also have this thing called Five Wishes, which is very helpful if you're having a conversation with your family about what you want to accomplish with your estate giving. If you want to email us, we'd be happy to send you a copy of that. Lastly, before we close, I just want to remind everybody that the next event we have is November 16th at 12 o'clock. We have Jolene Godfrey, who is a financial education expert and author of Raising Financially Fit Kids, Exploring Why Families Need a Shared Set of Fiscal Values, Common Language, and Basic Financial Skills. She'll be speaking on a webinar for us November 16th at noon. If you have not had a chance to sign up for that, I encourage you to do so. With that, I'm looking at the question answers, and I don't see any questions that have come in, so maybe we were extremely thorough.
We were so clear, Steve. We answered all the potential questions.
Right. So with that, unless Natella or Abby have any closing thoughts, I would wrap up the program. And thank you all for being here. Natella, do you have any?
Yeah, I just want to thank everyone for being here. And if you do have questions as you think through this, please call us and we're here for you. And thank you again, Abby, too, for participating and being so wonderful and explaining everything.
Oh, it looks like we have one question that may have come in. Let's see, hold on. Oh, okay, here's one question, I'm sorry. An estate plan cannot be changed once funded. Abby, you wanna try and tackle that?
So I don't know if that question relates to an estate plan that becomes irrevocable at death. So generally speaking, when I was talking about your estate planning documents, I was talking about your will or revocable trust where you direct the funds to the endowment or to the Jewish Community Foundation for the benefit of your endowment. To be effective at death, to the extent that you create an irrevocable trust, depending on how it's structured, there may be opportunities to make changes to it, and there may not. But so, for example, if money is supposed to go to your donor advised fund, you could use that successor form to push it into an endowment at a later date. So I don't know if I understood the question fully, but hopefully I did and hopefully I answered it. If not, feel free to ask a follow-up.
I think also just in case an endowment cannot be changed. Okay, right. So the question just came in and that's what I thought might be the question. Once an endowment is funded, that's right, it can't be changed or replaced unless there's a reason, like a problem with the charity where it's no longer a viable charity or something and then it needs to be. However, if you're doing a deferred endowment where you select a charity but you haven't funded it yet, that can be changed at any time. So with endowment funds, yes, once the funding comes, that funding is there locked in for that charity. You don't have to add any more to it, but whatever's there is now irrevocable.
Right. So if it's for a specific cause, if it's restricted for a cause, you may expand the charities or the you know, ways to support that cause, but that's correct. If it's already restricted to a specific charitable organization without there being other flexibility in the document for it being unable to be satisfied in the way that it's restricted, that's right.
I'll just add one example for that. So we have a donor who has their DAF balance will go to an endowment, and they might decide now that they want these charities to be funded, but next year they might decide different charities be funded. So that document can be changed until it's funded. But once it gets funded, then it won't be able to be changed. I hope that's helpful. It looks like that's all the questions we have, and we're running up against 1 o'clock, and we always promise to be prompt. So Abby, again, thank you so much for your expertise, for participating, and for your involvement on our board. We love having you. Natella, thank you as a colleague, and everybody for being here. And if you have any questions, please, Natella and I are here to answer your questions. And thank you again for participating.